My name is Mac McCon, and I'm here with Portastatic today.
That's a good way to put it, that you're here with them, that, you know, because they're like another being, right, to a certain extent. So let's just do the business part first. Did you ever think that Merge Records would be what it is today? You and the company treat the record business a bit differently, and it's really worked.
I mean, I think that we've always approached music and the label as from the standpoint of us being fans of music, you know, that we like. And when we started the label, it was really just bands that Laura and I, who runs a label with me, bands that we were in, eventually Superchunk, and some local bands. But then once we started touring, that's how we really ended up meeting a lot of people and hearing bands that ended up on the labels from playing shows with people. And
so it wasn't initially about how many records can I sell. It was like, we like this band. We think a lot of people like us will like this band.
Yeah, essentially. And also to just, I mean, when we first started, like I said, it was a lot of local bands. And what would happen is bands would start and then be really great, we thought, and then break up, you know. But maybe they would record some songs first. So we were putting out 7-inches by bands just in some ways to document it, just because we knew that they weren't going to be around in a year or something, you know.
That's kind of funny. Not record companies, but you're an archivist.
Yeah, essentially. So obviously it grew from there. And it's, you know, it's obviously a much bigger operation. When I say bigger operation, there's like 11 people that work there. It's not you know, Dell Computers or something, but it's grown, but it's, you know, it's been 17 years, so it's been a pretty slow process, you know, and a pretty organic process. And I think that, you know, your original question was, did we ever imagine the Merge would be where it is now? And I would say no, but at the same time, we never imagined that it wouldn't be. Like, we just never really, I think one of the reasons that we're still around is because we never really thought too far ahead, you know. It's more just like, well, let's just do what we're doing and then see what happens, kind of.
Yeah, all those board meetings really in the end don't really, you can have all the board meetings in the world and all the research in the world, and you still can't really predict, based on a focus group or a call-out research, how somebody's going to react to a song, right?
Right, so I mean, our feeling is like, if we just keep doing what we want to do and doing and putting out records that we like, if we don't have unrealistic expectations, then we can just keep going, you know what I mean?
In other words, those P&L unit sales forecasts.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, our theory is like, you know, let's be kind of conservative about things, and if things do better than we think they're going to, then everybody's happy, and if they don't, then no one is going broke, you know.
So I did a lot of research, and I couldn't find anybody who told me about the name Portastatic. So is static really portable?
It certainly is in our case. The name comes from, well, when I first, the first record that came out under the name Portastatic was a 7-inch on a label called 18 Wheeler Records out of New Jersey. And the guy running it, Tom, said, hey, I know that you do these home recordings that aren't part of Superchunk, you know, can I release some of those? So then at that point I had to come up with the name and hadn't really thought about it. And what I was recording at the time was it's called the Porta Studio, was the name of the machine, the 4-track cassette machine. And so I took the Porta part from that and then changed the studio part to static. So
due to copyright laws and, yes, not wanting to get sued. All right, on to the record. On the cover of Be Still Please, are you being pulled out to sea or pushed out because the sea doesn't like you?
That's a good question. I think I'm just kind of floating around in an inner tube, riding the waves.
You know, I mean, I have to go down this road because you went so far out of your way on the graphics on this thing. Then on the inside, every song has a picture attributed to it. I think the ice cream shot for Getting Saved truly portrays that kind of birthday.
And that was taken out at an airport. I'm trying to think of which one that. Oh, is that when I'm sitting inside the
car? Yeah, you're inside in the ice. Yeah, the ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the one where we actually referred to the lyrics kind of more specifically. But I didn't want every picture to try to be like, now this is explaining the song or describing the song or something. So some of them are more vague than others, and I just wanted to have some pictures that looked nice and that were different enough from each other to make a cool graphic. And they were all taken by a friend of ours, this guy Phil Morrison, who's film director, directed the movie Junebug.
Oh, there you go. Now, so does that mean that those are not abstract cows on the picture that accompanies I'm in Love with Arthur Dove? Those cows look pretty abstract to me.
Yeah, I suppose they are. They were real. They're real enough. They were licking my hand, but yeah, the
as cows are wanting to do.
Yeah, exactly.
But was that good or bad?
That was fine.
That was fine. You were okay with the cows licking your hand. Yeah. That wasn't a question that I had, but this time you added Laura Cantrell and Annie Hayden to the mix. So tell me a little bit about that.
Laura Cantrell is someone that I went to college with, and we had played songs together back then. We performed in different little arrangements at school, but and she's obviously gone on to greater things since then. But you know, I love her voice, and I thought that song would be a good match for it, and she was nice enough to do that. And I think it was right before she had a baby, so she had her hands full, I'm sure, getting ready for that, and she was still kind enough to take some time to record that. And Annie Hayden is, I've known her for a really long time, and her band Spent was on Merge, and then we've done some solo records of hers on Merge, and she's just got a beautiful voice. And you know, one of the things about this modern technology is that everyone doesn't actually have to be in the same room anymore to make a record, and because I knew I couldn't really fly them down and that kind of thing, and I couldn't bring all the stuff.
So they sent you the tracks.
So I sent them the tracks. They sang along, sent them back. I mean, it's pretty amazing how it works. And
it's been happening a lot these days.
Yeah.
It really allows artists to collaborate in a way that they never did before.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Worldwide.
And I'm lucky that they sang on it, because I think that they both have beautiful voices. I think.
So this album is no longer, I would not consider this a lo-fi project by any stretch of anyone's imagination. So, I mean, you recorded Bright Ideas, you know, right here at Tiny Telephone. Actually, John Vanderslice and I are going to get together for a similar talk next week, so that's going to be fun. But tell me a little bit about the recording process, because Arthur Dove is an example of a track that is just plain lush in a good way.
There's a lot of stuff going on that song. I guess the main process was that I made demos of all the songs, and they're on acoustic guitar. And so then when I went into the studio, I still kind of wanted that to be like the main thing at the heart of each song, even if songs like Arthur Dove had tons of stuff piled on top of it, you know. That song in particular, I guess I was kind of imagining, I don't know, like a record that sounds like a Kinks record or something, where everything sounds great, but then stuff comes in and it's kind of unexpected, like a guitar comes in really much louder than you would expect it to, just to play a solo for a few seconds and then drop out again. I mean, I really like that aspect of some of those.
So you've dropped lo-fi for ingenuity.
I hope
and
so.
Surprise,
I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, the lo-fi thing was always kind of like, I do like the sound of that, but at the time it was really just like, well, that's what I had at my disposal. You know, everybody didn't have a studio in their house.
On your blog, this was one of my favorites, you mentioned that the Vancouver gig was good, except that it was, quote, a kind of a battle with Chatty Cathy and her 400 yammering friends. Why do you think people come to see music and then start to, I'm the shush guy. I'm the guy who, you know, would be out there tonight as they're like, hey, you know what happened? And I'm like, okay, you paid the money. You know, and it is rock and roll, but there's different levels of rock and roll. You're not Poison, so they can't scream, you know?
I mean, I guess in some ways they paid the money, so they should be able to do whatever they want, but at the same time, everybody else paid the money too to hear the music. You know, I don't know. I was like, I hate to get too bothered by it, but
I love the Chatty Cathy. It was just the way you described it. It's kind of like you still made them into dolls. They just happen to be dolls that people are pulling their string a little too much.
I mean, sometimes they're just it's just distracting, you know. But I don't like to be the guy on stage who's like, everyone, be quiet so you can hear this amazing song I wrote. You know, because I don't really. I don't want it to be, it's not like it's a situation where that calls for reverence or something, you know.
But Elvis Costello would walk off stage if people were not energetic, you know, enough at his shows and they weren't dancing. He'd just say, I'm leaving,
right.
You know. So I guess there's...
He's earned the right to do that because he's Elvis Costello. Because he's Elvis Costello.
But you've had lots of interesting partners in crime on the tour. M. Ward, you've had Ira and Yola Tango, you've had Grizzly Bear, now Camera Obscura. So I think that mix says a lot for the audiences that appreciate your music, because you're really trying to tie all those people together. You know, you can't really put a label on them, but yet you've toured with all of them.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, you know, we're foisting ourselves on them, because those people all came to see the headliners, you know, and there we are, you know, making them wait. But I mean, hopefully they've enjoyed it. And I think that, you know, I don't think that the music that we do is so... I think it's non-specific, really, in a way that can go with a lot of different things, you know what I mean? And it's pretty flexible. Like, you know, right now we're touring as a duo with myself and Margaret White playing violin. And then back in the fall, we had a full band, you know. So it's kind of cool because we can be all over the map, really.
Your soundtrack work is, to use a bad expression, another tentacle that you kind of dip into the musical world. But you talk about Henry Mancini, Ry Cooder, Francis Lai. You know, you talk about old school musicians of influences, which is a lot more fun than just let's lay down some current rock and roll track, cut it, and call that scoring.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that there are people currently doing really cool soundtrack stuff, but I'm just not aware of them. You know what I mean? It's just, I mean, it seems like every movie has like a Danny Elfman score. But you know, there are a lot of really cool things going on out there. Like, I love the soundtrack for The Virgin Suicides that Air did. I think that's amazing.
That was pretty amazing.
Recent thing, but yeah. And it's not that recent anymore, I guess.
Right.
But,
right.
But I really enjoy doing the soundtrack stuff because I don't have to write words. I can just concentrate on the music and melodies, which is for me more fun than having to sit down and write lyrics.
So the other reason I went into your blog is it's always fun. You mentioned you've been listening to Big Dipper recently, and that blows me away because I went to the 25th reunion of my college radio station in Albany, New York, and turned it on, and somebody at 3 a.m. was playing Younger Bums by Big Dipper. Wow. And I went to school in Boston. I did radio in Boston, started my whole career in Boston. Mm. And had never heard of that band. Mm. And I heard Younger Bums, and I immediately called them, and they're like, "You've never heard of Big Dipper?" And now it's like every fourth week I get a chance, I pull that record out because it's so... And it's been covered by like an Australian band.
Superchunk used to do Younger Bums.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Really?
So
what an amazing song, though. It's just one of those, like, very strange, you know.
It's a ripoff of a Cat Stevens
song
also.
Yes,
but,
it is.
But that's... But I love Big Dipper, and I, you know, I wish that... I think I was talking about in the blog was
that... Somebody needs to put that on CD.
Yeah, just... I mean, because they've been on CD in various forms, but I think it needs to be reissued in a real way, you know.
So on a sadder note, I had the pleasure, it was probably 2 years ago already, that I interviewed Grant McLennan. Mm-hmm. It was the last year of his life, and he was a happy man, and then suddenly someone sent me an email, one of my listeners, and I said, oh my God. So he was really in his prime and enjoying what he was doing, and you've dedicated the record to him.
Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, someone, again, like, whose songs I think are amazing, and have listened to his records since I had when I was in high school. I had a shift on the college radio station at Duke in Durham, and Metal and Shells was like an import that we had, or actually someone released it here, but that was one of the first go-between things you could get in the States, and I love that record, which is like a compilation basically, and got to see them a few times after they got back together, and they're always great, you know.
Well, there's something you can go about tonight. The last time I saw them was here at Bimbo's.
That's why I actually interviewed him, probably in this room.
Right, yeah. They were just still, like, making such great music and everything, so it's really sad.
Yeah. This is a funny one, but it's the last one we're going to do before we do our little secret. Many reviewers say, I've read a whole pile of reviews, and the common thread is you are overlooked and underrated. So do you have any formal plans to solve that problem?
Yeah, you know, I kept seeing that also on, like...
Can you solve that, please?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's not up to me to rate myself, but... But the that was kind of driving me crazy because a lot of reviews would say, like, no one's gonna hear this album, but it's great. You know, I'm like, why?
It's like, why are you doing that?
Yeah. Why are you even saying it? So I don't know. What are you supposed to do?
So the last major thing that we do is we call it a musical sandwich, and you of all people. It's my, you notice I didn't ask you your influences because that is a big fat waste of time. That, you know, that RIYL that comes on every CD that I get from a promo company that says, you know, if you listen to, and I'm kind of like, who are you to tell me that this band sounds like what I listen to? So what we do is we do two of your songs as the bread, and this is what fills out the hour, but then as many other fillings as you want to put in between by other bands, and you just get to, and I go into the studio and literally exactly as you ask for it, I don't practice it, I slap it together, and it gets quite insane.
So let's see. Well, one thing I was looking for today that I couldn't find was Joe Simon, who's like a country guy.
It's
from
records.
So if you can find something by Joe Simon, that would be good. The only thing I've got is a Monument of Soul compilation, which is awesome. Up on the Roof, the Carole King version from like the old version, not
the,
you know,
the
70s
one.
Yeah.
Right.
The real Phil Spector-y sounding
right.
deal. How about a song by Evie Sands? You Know I Love You, that song? How about Point That Thing Somewhere Else by The Clean? Why don't we start with Sour Shores, and then and then the last one we could do... Okay, for the last one, why don't we do Sweetness and Light?
Okay.
And then after The Clean, why don't we do... it's called... Oh, it's that Caetano Veloso song. It's called... I don't know how you say it. It's called Marinho. It's called, like, I Am a Sailor, I think is what it means, but...